Spartans 2 Podcast Evolved, your home for Halo. I'm your host, Aaron, and with me this week, we've got Oren.
Hey, everyone.
This week, we continue our Road to Infinite series. We are bringing you a two-parter, so this will be part one of two on 2557 to Infinite. We are going to catch you up on all the goings-on around Halo 5 up to the current date in the Halo timeline. So we have a lot to cover in this episode, so we will be very busy. But before we dive into it, we are going to do some socials. If you're new to the show, welcome to Podcast Evolved. We host a variety of shows for you to listen to. This is our main show where we talk about all of the Halo news, lore, and things that will be of interest to the listeners. But we also have Mission Debrief, which is currently running through a good YouTube series called 20 for 20. Go and check that out if you get a chance. The guys work very hard on it. We've got the Halo Book Clubs, Builds with Blocks, and Halo Headlines. And you can learn more about all of our shows by going to the website. That's halopodcastevolve.com. And you will find links for everything Ian has slaved away and put together for us. And if you're already a fan of the show, we would really appreciate it if you could rate us on your podcast platform of choice and leave us a little review. And if you are also interested in the Halo Championship Series, or if you're a fan of esports in general, please check out our friends over at HCS Pro Talk. Josh and Will have a weekly show where they discuss all the goings-on in the competitive Halo scene. They have a big emphasis on the community every week. They do good stuff. They also do a segment for our live show every month as well, and we really do appreciate everything they do for us. We would also like to take a moment to thank all of our patrons for their continued support in helping us make Podcast Evolved everything it's been over the last couple of years. Thank you very much, patrons. Every single one of you, you know who you are. We love you all.
Yes, thank you very much.
If you would like to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/HaloPodcastEvolved, and there you can find out all of the perks and benefits to becoming a patron, such as access to the super secret Discord channel for patrons, the unique swag, and our soundtrack, featuring 18 songs, one of which you will heard as the intro to this show. And finally, we encourage all of our listeners to support us through Audible. You can go to audibletrial.com/podcastevolved and you can get a free trial today. Audible has a lot of good stuff. They have tons and tons of audiobooks, all of the Halo novels, lots of podcasts and lots of guided wellness programs as well. Personal recommendation, I just listened to the first three Dune novels in preparation for the new movie coming out. They're quite good.
Nice.
They also feature friend of the show, Scott Brick, as a narrator.
Yes.
One of several on those. They are quite big audiobook undertakings, so they're well worth a listen to if you get a chance.
How big is that series? Like, how many books?
I have no idea. I read a few things that basically said, listen to the first three, and after that, it's a little bit all over the place.
Wow.
There are a lot. Like, they just keep going.
Well, all right.
The first book's like 20-odd hours. It's quite long. Actually, yes, the books feature two Halo audiobook narrators. There's Scott Brick and there's Ewan Morton, who you may remember from the Halo 5 trilogy as well. I knew there were two voices I recognised. Yeah, they're quite good. They're worth listening to. Right, that will do all of our social stuff. So we have a little last week in Halo. Hopefully some of us did something Halo-related.
No, don't put that pressure on me.
I know, I didn't. I'm meaning to. I'm currently finishing up an event in Star Trek Online, and then I've decided I'm going to play through all the Halo missions on Heroic as preparation for Infinite. That's my plan to start in the next week or two. I'm going to jump onto Reach and just power through them all. So expect a few updates over the next couple of weeks as I either get on great or lose my mind.
I guess you could always bump it down to normal if you're a little rusty there.
I'm determined. It's going to be Heroic. It's going to be great. I'm dreading Halo 2, but we'll tackle those Jackal snipers when we get there.
They're much more doable in Heroic. They usually fire a warning shot, which gives you enough time to duck behind a rock.
My days of Legendary are now down to I do it once for the achievements and that's it. I need the completion for the campaign on Legendary and then I'm fine. I'm quite happy on Heroic. It's a good difficulty.
Heroic is a very good difficulty.
What is it on the old games, Halo, the way it was meant to be played? I'm all right. If I can keep up on Heroic, I'm near enough.
Yeah, I usually always do my first playthrough on Heroic and then bump it up for Legendary for the achievements, and I'll sometimes even keep it on Legendary. Like Halo 3 and Halo 4, you know, I found myself able to kind of keep the Legendary difficulty alive. I feel you. I'm tempted to play all the games again as well. I've thought about it. I don't know if I really have the time to do that, though. So that's kind of my only demotivator, I guess. Maybe it's worth playing Halo 5's campaign once again, just because of how, I don't know, lackluster that was. Or even maybe, actually, you know what I should probably do is replay Halo Wars 2. Because I don't think I've really played that since it came out. And that would be a good one to play before the Banished and all that.
I'm quite guilty of not having played enough Halo Wars 2 as well. I've dipped back in occasionally. There were a couple of evenings where I just couldn't decide what to play, so goofed around on Halo Wars for a while, but every so often I just find myself watching the cutscenes again. They're so good.
Yes, they're quite beautiful.
All right, well, on that slightly lackluster last week in Halo this week, I promise I'll have something for the next episode. I will. We are going to dive into our lore for this week. So, like we said, this is the Road to Infinite series. It got an unexpected extension last year, and we've been working our way through some extra topics to prepare everyone for Halo Infinite. Before we tackle this week's topic, we're going to talk about what we discussed last time. So that was Halo Multiplayer on episode 240. So we were joined, I believe, Oren, were you on this episode?
Yeah, it was me joined with Will and Josh, right, from HCS Pro Talk. It only felt, what's the word? It just felt like perfect for them to be on that episode talking about multiplayer as the games kind of have evolved and developed and iterated over the last 20 years. And since they're heavily focused on the competitive scene, Josh comes from a, you know, kind of like me. He played CE back in the way beginning. Will was introduced to Halo with Halo 5, but has been, you know, since gone back and played the other games. So it's very interesting getting their perspective on the other Halo multiplayer suites and how they've compared over the years to each other and, you know, what we may expect and to either kind of improve upon from Halo 5 to see what's happening in Halo Infinite. And even since we released that episode, we wanted to get it out before we kind of learned more about Infinite's multiplayer. And so as of recording, we have kind of learned a little bit about what that's going to look like. So it's kind of interesting to listen of what we talked about and how it's kind of shaping up to be.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to hearing what the guys make of whatever we get in the flighting that's coming up soon. So Pro Talk will be a good show to listen to once some people get their hands on it and we hear kind of how it feels and what's happening, what it's like.
Yeah, whatever the first Monday after the flights would be the perfect episode to listen to from their show, because I think it's going to be a weekend that the flights are going to happen.
If you're listening to this now, a little look behind the scenes. We are recording this on the 25th of July, and speculation is that sometime in the next week, probably, hopefully next weekend, we might get our first flight. So we'll have to wait and see if anyone in the community gets in and what happens from there. We're all very excited about it. Right, so our next big lore topic, this is what we're diving into now. It's 2557 to Infinite. There is a lot to cover. We are going to split this into two parts, but there is a sizable chunk of stuff for us to discuss today. Oren, do you want to get us started with this, and then we will just tackle it as we go?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the best way to do it. I'll kind of introduce whatever it is, and yeah, we'll just kind of spitball, you know, the events and stuff. When we were looking at this kind of topic, like I knew we would have this subject to talk about towards the end of the Road to Infinite series, but as more and more things started coming out between kind of last year and this year, and putting everything together, it originally was 2558, kind of thinking that Infinite was going to take place in 2560 or 2559, but now it kind of, as we were looking about it, it kind of made sense to just start with Halo 4, because that's when 343 took over Halo and started, you know, weaving their stories in and out of things. And there's a lot that comes about in 2558 that's because of what happens in 2557. And although you could go, oh, well, what about 2556 and all that kind of stuff, it felt like starting with Halo 4 is a really good starting point. Just kind of made sense to us. So that's where we will begin. But I wanted to do a disclaimer before we get started, because like Aaron mentioned, we are recording this on July 25th in 2021. We still don't know Infinite's release date. It's sometime this holiday, and we don't know what else will be announced. So it probably won't have too much of an influence on this part one, because we're going to cover everything up into the Guardian event. But for next episode, we will likely record it before new information comes out. So, you know, just wanted to throw that out there, that we may not have it all the way up to Infinite like it would be. Because, like, for instance, right now, the next Halo novel that comes out is Divine Wind, that comes out on October 12th. And the episode 2, I think, will come out before that time, before we're able to read it and really digest it. So, you know, we'll just do our usual book club and kind of cover that. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there before we get started. But that's how it will go. So, all right. So in 2557, we kind of labeled this the pre-Halo 5 Guardians sort of section. We start with Halo 4. You know, at the end of Halo 3, Master Chief and Cortana are adrift on half of the Ford onto Dawn in space. So we follow them. 4 years later, the Ford onto Dawn is drifted to the Shield world Requiem. Cortana sees a threat and a presence, so she wakes Chief up, and they just get thrown into this conflict that's going on. They get sucked in a Requiem, and we as the player learn that there's ex-Covenant forces fighting. There's these strange new enemies called Prometheans fighting. We're hearing about UNSC presence. There's a lot going on that Chief is kind of quickly learning about. All the while, Cortana is showing signs of her rampancy, because she was commissioned 8 years prior to this point in time, and her mind is slowly deteriorating. And so there's a lot of conflict very early on in Halo 4's story. And then, of course, as you play the game, we awaken the Didact, which is the Ur Didact, if you're familiar from the Forerunner saga. And he has a vengeance, and he wants to destroy humanity and go right back to his kind of chaotic and maniacal ways. And now the Master Chief has to stop them, but also the Infinity wants to keep themselves safe. And so there's some kind of tension there. And all the while, Cortana is going rampant. And so it's a lot that Chief has to kind of sort through. But eventually, it all builds up to the confrontation on the Didact ship, which is called the
Mantle's Approach.
Mantle's Approach, that's it.
It is a rather large Forerunner statement in overcompensation. That is what Mantle's Approach is.
I mean, the composer in and of itself is huge, and that's just a small piece within his ship. Forerunners were, you know, didn't have any restraint when it came to building things of size.
They were not shy about building giant things that only like one or two Forerunners lived in. They did a lot of stuff like that. Yeah, like this whole, the end of Halo 4, like the confrontation with the Didact, the fight with him at the end, and then the like heartbreaking sadness with Cortana. It's so good. Everything about this, even down to the like the flight level towards the end as you fight your way on board Mantle's Approach and you're doing space combat and a trench run. And there's so much good stuff at the end of this game.
Yeah, Midnight's a great last mission. It really has all those pieces of flying combat. You have some close quarters. You have some big heavy guns that you can use. And then the big, you know, confrontation at the end. The boss fight was a little, you know, quick, timey, and What? It's not the Tartarus fight, but we'll live with that. Better than the Jewel fight, which we'll get to.
Yes.
Yeah. So Master Chief and Cortana are trying to stop the Didact. They're on a hard light bridge. Cortana manages to restrain the Didact, and Chief throws a pulse grenade into his chest. It explodes, and he falls down, seemingly to his death. And when that happens, Chief punches the Havoc bomb that he has to detonate and to destroy the Composer and to destroy Mansell's approach, because at this time as well, the Composer is, you know, right outside Earth and shooting its beam down on New Phoenix and composing thousands and thousands of humans. So Chief detonates the bomb, and Cortana, in her last sort of bit of power, manages to teleport him away and create a like hard light void to protect him with all of her, you know, last bits of power. And they have this, you know, really touching moment, and it's seemingly kind of the end of Cortana. She just, all of her brain power just ceases to, you know, kind of exist, and very, very sad.
Yeah, and then Chief has that sad conversation with Lasky on the observation deck of the Infinity, and you just, like, you want to hug the big guy. He just needs a hug.
Lasky definitely wants to. You could see it.
Yeah.
But after this, but basically during the whole engagement between the Didact and Chief, Cortana was splitting herself over and over again to just kind of overload the Mantle's approaches, sort of systems, and everything that the Didact was doing. And one of those splinters, you know, peeled off and was lost in slipspace. And we don't really know how long, but she disappeared and went through slipspace and then found Genesis, the Forerunner installation that we will then visit in Halo 5. And she sees this spark of light that the splinter kind of approaches. She's curious about it. What is it? And that's when she gets pulled into this like dark void that is the domain. And she talks to this ominous voice called the Keeper, and say, you know, you learn a little bit how where she is a place that's been locked away for hundreds and thousands of years by the Forerunners, and there's no way in and there's no way out. So you're just going to have to be stuck here. But Cortana's, you know, wants to know what's going on. She's eager to learn all that information, so she just continues to talk to this Keeper character to kind of stall him, and eventually accesses like a back door, goes around him, and reopens this gateway. And it is then revealed that this gateway is the domain that has since been locked away. And she convinces the Keeper to assist her to seek and accomplish this great work that she has decided for herself with all these Forerunner knowledges that she has over these years, and then renames the Keeper the Warden Eternal. And that is their kind of little segue into the events of Halo 5. But that kind of happens sometime after Halo 4. And that was, of course, part of, do we want to say like where all these sources are from? It kind of would make sense, right?
Yeah, we can mention them as we go here.
So obviously Halo 4 was Halo 4. You play the game, you'll learn more about that. We also have Mission Debrief, where Colin and the crew go through every mission of every Halo game. So they have their own segment for Halo 4. And you can listen to each one of their mission episodes for very detailed story beats and conversation for them. And then the story I just talked about with Cortana in space, the Splinter, is from the Tales of Slipspace comic book collection that has multiple comic book stories, and that specific one was called Dominion Splinter. I think it was written by Frank O'Connor. Do you want to talk about the next sort of chapter in this, Aaron?
So this next one it's part of Escalation. It is a three-part issue called The Next 72 Hours, and this is literally the next 72 hours after Halo 4, hence the name. So this is Chief straight after the rescue from the Infinity. He's debriefed by Oni and the heads of the UNSC, cracks a few jokes with Lord Hood, then he teams up with Blue Team. Hood tells him to go and take a break, but Chief is burying himself in his work, so he doesn't feel emotions and decides instead to take Blue Team off and do some missions. So one of these missions is an emergency signal that comes from Installation 03. There is a problem with the science team on the Halo. Black Team were there?
Yes. That was Black Team was the Spartan team assigned to the science detail.
They arrive here and find out that Black Team have been murdered.
Oh no.
Yep, the Didact is still alive. The reason, by the way, that Installation 03 is important is because it is, they call it, what is the name of the
Composer's Forge?
Is it the Composer? There's the, what do they call the Tunnel of Souls? There's a name for that. It may be part of the Composer's Forge. I think it might have its own name, but basically, if you are composed in New Phoenix, you were zapped through slipspace to this very, what I can only describe as Event Horizon-style Tunnel of Souls, where you're kept until you're turned into a Promethean.
Well, are you talking about the Didact's gift, that artifact that they find? Because that sounds like what that is in from Spartan Ops, which we'll get to in a minute. Is there something else on Installation 3?
There's like the Well of, I don't want to say Well of Souls because I don't think that's right, but it's this nice image where this is where you go when you've been zapped by the Composer and you're kind of stored in the OneDrive until you're needed. And then there's the Composer's Forge itself, which has, shock horror, several more Composers sitting waiting to be used.
Yeah, just sitting there.
We thought we had destroyed the Composers. We were wrong. So Blue Team ends up in a long fight with the Didact. Chief gets his visor smashed during all of this. We have that nice artwork of Chief and his one eye looking through the crack in the visor.
It's the Composer's Abyss.
The Composer's Abyss. There we go.
It's an underground structure used to store victims digitized by the Composer. Located at the end of a tunnel in a slipspace portal that then leads to the Composer's Forge.
I knew there was something to that there. What ends up happening is that Blue Team team up with the Monitor because he would also like rid of the Didact because the Didact is messing with his installation. So in the end, the only way that Blue Team have to beat the Didact is they eject the control room. I believe it's the control room section, isn't it? They eject that the ring and launch it into the Composer's Forge and smash the Didact in the process. And then we finish on like an image of what I originally thought was the Didact on fire, but we later sort of speculate is actually the Didact being composed. And that is where we finish on this series. The Composer's Forge is destroyed. The Didact is taken out of the picture for now.
Presumed dead.
Yes. Presumed dead for the moment. And that's where we finish on the next 72 hours. Blue Team go off and have several more adventures. They do, what do you call it? Hunt the Truth. Hunt the Truth stuff.
Hunt the Truth. Yeah.
That's what comes up next. Right. Do you want to take us through the next bit then?
Yeah, sure. So then, after that, we get to about September of 2557, and we're introduced to the characters, or the crew of the Ace of Spades, and they've had some stories and dealings prior to this moment, but what is unique about this moment in time is that the crew, which is a salvage crew, they're kind of a band of misfits, their leader, their captain is Ryan, who's the Ryan Forge, which is the daughter of John Forge, who is the ODST, or the sergeant from the Spirit of Fire, who was killed in action. And so she and her crew are salvaging the galaxy, looking for artifacts or other sort of just weapons and debris.
They mostly specialize in Forerunner technological antiques. They are like the big money item in the Halo universe now because the Forerunners are they're not even a secret anymore. Like, we know some details about them.
But like, it's more than just like Oni. Like, even just like random worlds across the galaxy kind of like know about them, and their presence is becoming more and more known.
Yeah, Oni has released some information. I don't know if humans know of the Halos. I'm unsure about that, but like, they absolutely know about the portal in Voi because there's a giant city that's not there anymore, and now there's a hole in the ground that shoots people across the galaxy.
Yes, so that's what they kind of do. And during their dealings, they find an armature that has an AI in it called Spark, who, if you don't know, is Guilty 3 or 343 Guilty Spark post Halo 3. They run into each other and they have similar interests and decide to team up. And they are brought to Mount Kilimanjaro at Earth, and they're also being pursued by Oni, because they know that the Ace of Spades has some Forerunner technology that they are dubbing as Spark, even though, you know, Spark wasn't anyone else's to have. So it's a kind of this weird finger-pointing game. But they go to Mount Kilimanjaro because there's a secret Forerunner facility buried within the mountain. And when they go there, they find this pillar of light that gets activated, and Spark steps into this pillar of light and talks to an imprint of the librarian. And she explains that she was awakened on Requiem because of the events of Halo 4 and Spartan Ops, and all, or not Spartan Ops yet, but because of the incidents of Halo 4, and that she wants Spark to help take back the mantle of responsibility and to help bring humanity to assume the mantle. Because it was always her belief, even 100,000 years ago, that humans were to be the ones that took the mantle from the Forerunners. And so she gives him a cool little key, and she's like, go to Bastion. And he's like, okay, I'm not really sure what that means, but okay. And they leave the mountain and escape Oni, and him and Ryan kind of have a talk where, you know, Ryan now knows that her father is dead after looking for him for all these years, but she still wants to find the Spirit of Fire. But meanwhile, Spark wants to pursue the coordinates of this key because he feels that he has, you know, a new higher calling from what the librarian has said. So they go off and do that for a couple months, and we'll kind of pick up their story in a little bit. That's kind of that's basically the events of 2557. Aaron, do you want to take us away from 2558? What we got going on there?
Certainly, we can go up next. So this is the thrilling installment of Spartan Ops. This begins in February 2558. We'll do the short version of Spartan Ops because we're not going to get into all of this because it's a little bit of a snooze for the most part.
Yeah, I tried to be brief, but I don't know how much you want to read this.
It's very stretched out because of the 10 missions per episode thing, so it feels a lot longer than it really is. So the short version of it is Fireteam Majestic and Crimson board the Infinity. The Infinity goes back to Requiem. This is the Battle for Requiem Part 2. Infinity smashes through some ships, makes a big entrance. The Spartans fight their way down to the planet and give humanity a foothold on the shield world. Crimson discovers a Forerunner slipspace artifact. They bring it aboard the Infinity. Glassman has a look at it. Glassman gets zapped somewhere else. They don't know where. It also anchors the Infinity in place and kind of locks down its engines, which are Forerunner as well. They have to go and get Halsey taken out of prison and brought to the Infinity to help them solve the mystery. Meanwhile, Glassman has been teleported to Julum Dama, who is not very happy with anything that's been going on. As a nice little touch to the novels, Jule fits Glassman with an explosive vest and sets him to work. When you really want to solve Forerunner things, you want Halsey, not Glassman. Not that, like, Glassman does okay, but he's no Halsey.
He really does try his best, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah, like, if you're stuck and it's a choice between Glassman or no one, you'll take Glassman, but he wouldn't be my first choice.
Well, then there's another artifact that gets found called the Didax Gift, which is similar to the Composer's Abyss that a lot of the composed individuals from the New Phoenix event or incident are kind of kept and stored.
They discover then the dark secret that the Prometheans are made from the composed humans.
Dun, dun, dun.
These Prometheans that have attacked the Infinity have memories of New Phoenix and are not like ancient humanity or anything else.
Yeah.
We then have Thorn rescues Glassman from Julum Dama.
Before all that, the Halsey, well, yeah, but before that, Halsey, you know, she continues to research both of these artifacts, the first one that teleported Glassman, but also this new one. And there's some sort of link to the librarian shrine where Jewel is. And so she's like talking to someone. I don't know if she knows it's Jewel. I don't think she does. And she's just trying to access information.
I was going to say, I don't think Halsey's kidnapping is a kidnapping. I think it's her exit. I think she knows it's Jewel and she wants out.
That would make sense that of how she was, or he was, him and his Covenant forces were able to kind of board the Infinity and know exactly where she was and kind of take her out.
She lets them in the door because they're her means to an end, because Halsey is completely convinced of her superiority to everyone else and thinks that she is indispensable at all times and will succeed. She gets kidnapped off the Infinity and taken to Jewel. She immediately solves everything that Glassman struggled with. She then has an interaction with the librarian's essence that is in Requiem. This is the same one that Chief talks to in Halo 4. And the librarian gives Halsey the Janus key and tells her to take it to the Absolute Record, which will start an escalation arc that drove me insane. Jewel's not very happy about this. There's a bit of a fight. The key gets split into its two component parts. Humanity ends up with one half, and Halsey ends up going off with Jewel with the other part. Also, to tie into this, because this bounces back and forth, after Halsey is kidnapped, Osman orders Lasky to have her assassinated, which Palmer is all too readily willing to do. So she gears up and goes to take out Halsey, and Lasky, who's not happy about this, sends Majestic or Crimson to stop Halsey, or to stop Palmer.
Yeah, Majestic. Well, not to stop Palmer, but to try to rescue Halsey before Palmer gets to her. But then Halsey ends up getting quote-unquote kidnapped still, or held captive by Jewel.
Yeah, she gets shot in the arm and taken out of action, and the last we see of her is she's being carried away by Jewel. He's clearly chopped her arm off with his energy sword and like tied the sleeve around it, and he takes her away with the half of the key. And then, meanwhile, back on the Infinity, the crew have to free the Infinity from the Slipspace Forerunner mystery box and unlock it from Requiem, because the shield world has been set on a self-destruct course and flies into the sun.
Yes.
That would be like the short version of what happens in Spartan Ops.
I mean, that's a pretty short version.
The Librarian's Essence also, as will become tradition with the Librarian's Essence, transmits itself to the Absolute Record. That is like the, I forgot, I was reading through like the breakdown of it, but the last few Spartan Ops missions are you like helping the Librarian's Essence transmit off Requiem during the evac. I missed all of that. I don't recall any of it. It's like two or three of the missions are you helping to secure the transmission point and send the essence on its way. That's a whole thing. Spartan Ops, it's all right. Don't play through it. Just watch the cutscenes on YouTube.
Or listen to mission debriefs.
Yes, you can do that as well. And you can listen to Krista's slow descent into madness, because she replayed all of them.
What a trooper. I mean, I've replayed them all on the Master Chief Collection on Legendary because it's an achievement. And that's the last time I've ever played them.
And it probably will be the last time you ever play them.
Yeah. So then this story then gets picked up. Do you want to talk about that?
I don't mind. I can finish this up because the two kind of tie together.
Yeah, go ahead and wrap this one up.
This leads us into Halo Escalation. This particular arc is 4 issues. It is 13 to 16. It is the Janus Key. This takes place roughly between March and September of 2558. In issue 13, Halsey wants the absolute record. Palmer wants to kill Halsey. Infinity investigates a slipspace jamming signal created by Halsey. Issue 14, Glassman sends the Infinity's Janus Key planet side. Jewel has a traitor in his midst. On his fleet, there's fighting between the Spartans and the Covenants. Palmer sets a trap for Halsey. Palmer, in issue 16, tries to kill Halsey again. Halsey escapes, gets both halves of the key, and is on her way to the absolute record. And Palmer ends up looking like an idiot.
Yes.
Not an awful lot happens issue to issue during Escalation, so if you think that's a weirdly short amount of stuff for four issues, that's because it is.
Yeah. And Escalation also bounces around with different stories, so it's this is kind of these key, you know, chronological stories that help connect everything. But yeah, so we'll get back to them in a minute. But around the same time that Halsey jumps off to go to the absolute record, that's, you know, around September or so, in October of 2558, we return to the crew of the Ace of Spades. So after their sort of tenure at, and their visit, I should say, of Mount Kilimanjaro, the way that Ryan and Spark sort of made a deal was like, well, let's spend 6 months looking for the Spirit of Fire. You can do that. But if there is no development and any kind of things in that regard, I think we should move our resources to follow the coordinates of this key. And so Ryan, you know, agrees because they spent so much time looking and not really finding anything on where the Spirit of Fire went and where it is. She even went home to where her mother lives and reconnected with her after so long. So she's very much trying to close that door, at least temporarily, and start on this new adventure on whatever Spark has to find whatever Bastion is. So they activate the key, and there's coordinates on it that lead to Installation 07, which we know as the location of where Halo Infinite will take place. But in this point of time, Installation 07 just has some scientists on it. There's, I forget the name of the operation, but it's mostly just kind of research and development. There's just a small UNSC presence there, a few Spartans, and they're just kind of researching, you know, all the different rings. Because most of the rings are, you know, UNSC knows where they are, and there's, you know, testing to some degree going on.
They've had a team on this installation from around Hunters in the Dark. This is the ring that features at the start of that story when they detect the signal from the arc that the Halos have activated in slow motion.
What is that, 2553, pretty much? That was like the end of Halo 3, was 2553.
Yeah, it's shortly after that, so Henry Lam is on the Halo, they're trying to find the control room, so like the UNSC's been there for several years and haven't had much success because this Halo is different to all of the others.
Yes, it's different. It's the oldest because it was part of the original 12-ring array and then was downsized to fit the current 7-ring array. So they're doing their thing on one end, and it's even funny that when Spark takes the team over there and they fly in, they're like, oh, there's a UNSC presence over here, but if we fly this path, we'll be able to sneak in undetected and kind of burn through this brush and go into the ring, because we need to find the control room and maybe even talk to the monitor, because both of which haven't, you know, we have no idea where they are. And so they travel through the chasms of the inner workings of the ring. They eventually find the control room. And Spark, even though he has an armature body, needs Ryan to kind of interact with the mechanisms and stuff in order for them to activate. And when Ryan activates the control room with the key that Spark has, the slipspace portal like immediately opens up and just sucks Ryan into it and teleports her somewhere, and another key pops up that then Spark grabs, and it kind of joins the key he already had and then projects new coordinates. So he quickly runs back to the ship. He's kind of explaining a little bit of what happened, but he's also kind of wants to just do his thing. And, you know, he cares about Ryan, but...
Yeah, the story does a very good job of making you question his loyalty for quite some time, because you don't really know for a while, did he let Ryan fall through the portal on purpose because he didn't need her anymore, or what happened? You know, why didn't he rescue her? Why did he snatch the key? But as he later reveals, he wouldn't have been able to stop her from being teleported, so he had to snatch the key and then go about the long way of finding her. So it does a good job of, like, making you wonder for a while, is he about to turn into old red-eyed Spark?
But his hunch is, you know, pretty logical, to where, you know, the crew of the Ace of Spades, like, well, we have to, you know, abort this mission and go find her. And Spark's like, well, logically speaking, she's most likely at the next place where we need to go to, because we have a new coordinates on this key. So we should leave Installation 07 and travel to this next planet. New Carthage?
Yes.
Because she's probably there. So they go to New Carthage. And again, they have to find this secret Forerunner facility that's underground of this.
It's under Hannibal Weapons Research, and it turns out that this is how they have the, like, high-end technology that they have. They've known about this facility for years, and they have used it to enhance their weapons systems and technology. It's why the Hannibal Mantis and tanks are so much better than anything else. Which is a nice touch.
Integrated with Forerunner tech and all that kind of stuff. So they hatch this plan to do this, like, espionage type of insertion where Ram, which is like Ryan's number two, and Spark go to basically infiltrate the HQ to get down into the secret Forerunner facility and activate the key activate the console to then get the next key. And while they're doing that, you know, Oni's also tracking them. And long story short, it's a great action sequence. But long story short, they get the coordinates for the next key, but they have to split up. And so Ram and Lessa kind of run away, and they're kind of together hiding out. And Nico gets separated, and so he's now hiding out, and they manage to give the key to Spark, and Spark takes their ship, the Ace of Spades, and he just jumps to wherever the coordinates are. And then they have to kind of just lie low for a little bit, and they have this whole, like, last resort plan to where if anything like that were to happen, they would regroup in, like, 2 or 3 weeks at a specified predetermined location. So while they're holding out, avoiding capture, Spark goes off to try to find Ryan. Ryan's also having this whole other sort of episode where she is on this planet called Erebus 7.
Yeah. She is basically living the nightmare of the Halo version of Predator.
Yes. So she's, like, super weak, and when she went through the portal, she was injured, and she is no one around, no food, no water or anything. And so she is, like, crawling along, but she's being watched by these animals, these, like, vicious animals, yeah, kind of akin to Predator. And eventually she does find individuals and, like, scientists who are also kind of, like, holding out, but they try to turn on her. And that's, like, right when Spark kind of arrives and has everyone come aboard.
He rescues all of them, yeah. He picks them up off the planet. He gets them away. He reveals that the planet is deliberately hostile to all life that isn't supposed to be there, because it's been designed that way by the Forerunners. And the, like, tiger creature, what do they call them? Anglers, as in the angler fish.
Yeah.
So they're deliberately, like, bred. He thinks they may even be creations of the, or, like, enhancements by the librarian, because she's partial to things like this, because she has, like, the vicious, in my mind, in the Forerunner sagas, they sound like giant underwater Venus flytraps in the lake. So she's fond of, like, using, yep, vicious plants and animal life. So he rescues them. They leave the Oni guys somewhere to be picked up. But the Oni guys know who they are, by the way, and they're like, we are fine with this. You guys go on. You rescued us from the planet of evil tiger creature things, so we're all good with this.
And they talk to like the precipice or something like that. They talk to a Forerunner installation or a Forerunner AI using that key, and it then reveals the location of Bastion after they go through like a series of tests that they pass. And it is at that time when they fly off and they travel the long journey to Bastion, and we'll kind of like pause the story there. But we do go back to, you know, the other crew members, Lessa, Nico, and Ram, very soon. All right, so then we have kind of September-ish, kind of going back. This is leading up to, let's see, Halo 5 is in October of 2558. In September, we have Halo Envoy. This is fairly standalone, but the kind of interesting bit here is that you have Gray Team, and they're doing another mission with this Envoy Sangheili, trying to work through, you know, post Halo 3 and Halo 4 diplomatic relations on this this planet. There's a brute chieftain that's trying to gain power, and so it's all about Gray Team's sort of fight to stop this this brute Hecabe. But it's really interesting. There's this Forerunner crown that controls these ancient beings known as the
Sarkoi.
Sarkoi. and yeah, it's kind of a big plot, but it kind of happens in a void over in this part of the galaxy. I think it gives us some context of just kind of evil factions post Covenant. Because it mentions the Banished and Atriox, which we knew kind of a little bit about when the story came out.
It gives us our first introduction to the Banished, because I believe this is the first time we like see them. Doesn't this have the space battle with the, where they talk about like the Banished combat style is armor your ships up like fuck and get straight into the middle of combat, and they like take out the elite ships. And then they land on the planet and begin this whole process.
This isn't the Banished, though. This is Hecabe's like own forces. So, I mean, I might mention it, but I don't think we really see the Banished fighting style. I think it's more of them just talking about, because I think there was like some interpolitical dialogue between Hecabe and his like number ones and number twos, to where he's like, oh, you're trying to be just like Atriox and the Banished. And then he's like, no, I don't want to be those animals. I want to be my own God. It's a good story, but it kind of happens in isolation. All right, so then we have Legacy of Onyx, also in September. Do you want to talk about this one?
Legacy of Onyx is kind of, it's a little bit mix of young adult Halo and Halo meets Harry Potter in a way. It is about, the main character is called Molly. So it introduces us to Molly on, she's on her homeworld with her family. It is Paris 4. It's being attacked by the Covenant. It is to this day up there with the kidnap scene in the Halo 5 books as one of the most traumatic story parts in all of Halo, I think. It's this family trying to like get to an evacuation point to flee the Covenant as they glass the planet. Long story short, most of the family do not survive. Her parents are killed. Molly survives. She's rescued, funnily enough, by Sergeant Johnson. And then we meet her in later life. She is now a foster child of her family's friends. They are scientists. They get a gig with Oni to go to a research facility that turns out to be Onyx, specifically Trevelyan. Her foster parents take her to Onyx, where they begin their new life together. She's on Onyx. Onyx is a joint operation. It is being run between the humans and a number of ex-Covenant species. I think it's mainly, it's just elites and grunts, isn't it? There's no jackals or anyone know about Onyx.
No, I think it's just elites and grunts.
Yeah, just them and the engineers. Roamed Adrift is probably the main engineer in this one. So we get introduced to a number of... Kasha is Hylot. She's like the main elite here. She is the headmaster of the school. We get a lot of Molly having to like face her demons and realize that not all members of the Covenant are evil and want to kill her. And some of them are good people. We get introduced to one of Julim Dama's sons, who is also now being fostered by Kasha Hylot, because Jule's wife was killed during the Kilo 5 novels. So his children were left motherless because they don't know who their fathers are, but they figure it out later. There's a lot of stuff going on here. What do we have? There is a character called the Pale Blade, and he is Dural Umdama. He is the older son of Jule, and he goes by the name the Pale Blade. He gathers up a group of... Oh, what are they called? The Servants of the Abiding Truth. He takes a group of them and goes into Onyx through the back door. It's through the portal that Jule escaped Onyx in. So he breaches the facility, sets up a base there. He wants to kill the humans, get revenge. There's a whole lot going on. While all this happens, Molly's parents are there to study the Guardian that is on Onyx, because humanity are aware that the Guardian events are happening and they're starting to happen more rapidly. This is all sort of happening around the same time, I think.
No, I think they just find the Guardian. They're just researching it. Does the Guardian event not happen simultaneously?
No, some of the Guardians activate beforehand. What happens simultaneously is the created uprising. But the Guardians have been activating for a couple of months, because you have the Guardian at Meridian went first, and then the Guardian at Sinion. But there were others before that, because this is what sets off like Hunt the Truth and other things, is that colonies are going dark, events are happening, no one's sure what's going on, but that's actually Guardians activating one at a time. So they're aware that this Guardian is here. They want to study it, so that's why her foster parents are sort of been brought in, because they are forerunner researchers and they're here to study it and see if there's anything can be done. And that's, I think, kind of, we're going to split this in two and talk about the other part later on.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Well, we have the Absolute Record, which is the last sort of, the part three, if you will, of the Spartan Ops Janus Key Absolute Record sort of bit, where basically you have the UNSC pursuing Jule, Halsey with the two halves of the Janus Key, or now Halmler, who has...
Halsey has both halves of the Janus Key.
That's right, and she's on her way to the... Yeah, okay. So then you have Palmer Thorn, Spartan Tanaka, and then Glassman, and then you have an elite who left... Jule's sort of faction to help humanity. They are all stowed away on Jule's ship, which is on their way to the Absolute Record. And Halsey activates the portals to the Absolute Record on the ship, and it tears the two carrier ships like in half. And the fire team, like the I don't know, they don't have a name, but like Palmer and all of them, they are now like forced to like survive and blow their cover. And so they fight their way through the Breath of Annihilation, which is one of those ships, and they hop on the Song of Retribution before the Song of Retribution, which is where Jule is and Halsey when they go through the portal. But the Sangheili, Ait, Sevi, and Spartan Thorn, they return to the Breath of Annihilation in attempt to contact Oni, while Palmer, Tanaka, and Glassman stay on the Retribution with Halsey and Jule through the portal. And when they get to the portal, they approach a construct of the record, and it actually teleports Palmer, Tanaka, and Glassman, like, all there. And everyone kind of debates over who the proper steward is of the facility. Because The Steward is the giant construct that Halsey talks to get into it, right?
Yes, he's like an unnamed, we assume like another contender-ish class AI. He has the same sort of visual representation as I believe Mendigan Bias has in some of the lore.
Yeah, similar to Benedict. Yeah,
he has that same sort of big armature. So he's there and he does a series of tests to figure out, are they worthy to have access to the absolute record? And of course, Halsey ballses the whole thing up because she doesn't have time for this. She hacks the system and hacks the contender class AI.
A lot like Cortana did when she was trying to get into the domain, funnily enough.
There's a few issues with that. I think that might be the most overpowered move in all of Halo, but we'll let that slide. So the short version is that in the end, we are not worthy of access to the absolute record. And the custodian basically says, nah, sorry, lads, you fucked this up. Even though at the time, the other team that was not Halsey were like getting through the puzzles, Glassman and that, they were working through it. They were doing all right. If they'd have gone, we would have had control of the absolute record.
Yeah, because like the librarian's essence pretty much told Halsey that she is worthy and she just has to go do it. But Halsey was just impatient and was high and mighty that kind of did all this. And remember, the absolute record is the cartography map that shows all of the Forerunner artifacts spread throughout the entire galaxy. So it's a pretty big deal to have access to the absolute record.
This basically ends, and because we can't have access to this for story reasons, we end up leaving the absolute record. Halsey ends up back in the hands of Jule again. She goes off with him. The rest of the team make it back to the Infinity. Everyone is kind of back at their starting point, no further along, and sets us up for Halo 5.
Yes, which I can get into. So we have the beginning of Halo 5 where Fireteam Osiris is assembled. We have Spartan Locke, Spartan Buck, Spartan Tanaka, and Spartan Vale. And they track Jule to this planet called Kamchatka, and they do this awesome snow falling, shooting everything and supermanning their way through the forces. And eventually corner Jule and kill him, and they were able to rescue Halsey. And there's some dialogue, there's some resentment between Halsey and Palmer. And do they talk about the Guardians, of how there's like disturbances going on? Is there a mention there? I feel like there is.
I feel like that happens on, that's the start of Glast, I believe. That cutscene is like the, those cutscenes take place there because you've got, there's this mission, then it cuts to Argent Moon, which is Blue Team. So they've been sent to recover the Argent Moon station. There's a lot of things happen there. Argent Moon features heavily in some of the Troy Denning novels. Last Light?
Like Last Light.
And Retribution, yeah. So you'll get some backstory there. But the short version is Blue Team are forced to do asset denial and destroy the station. Chief falls off a bridge and has a vision of Cortana in the domain. She tells him to go to Meridian. Tells him Meridian is next. Things are activating. So he gets on a prowler with Blue Team because they decide can't court-martial everyone. And they go off and do their thing. And then I think it cuts back to the next mission and the cutscene is Osiris arriving back on Infinity. They hand Halsey over to Palmer and Lasky, and Halsey's going on about, like, I sent you those messages weeks ago. How far has she spread? There's something else going on. And then it cuts to a scene on the bridge, which is a little weirdly out of context, where they're talking about Cortana being alive. Roland is very pissed off that no one's listening to him. He, like, loses his temper. Lasky tells him he's out of line. He has this thing about, I'm out of line. Why is everyone trying to kill Cortana just because she wouldn't die when she was supposed to? And then the cutscene, like, weirdly ends again.
Yeah, it ends just, it starts fading, like, too soon. And then just kind of fades out. It's so weird. It's always left me with like this weird feeling after watching it.
That and a few other things have fueled the speculation, and I've heard a few rumors over the years that Halo 5 had to be chopped down to ship, and some of the things that were called were story elements that I think they talked about, like a slight open world feel to it, which makes sense when we talk about this later, because there are like hub world mission levels in Halo 5 that don't have any like hub options. You go straight from one mission to the next one. Rumors had it those hub worlds would have been like somewhere where you could have launched several different missions from and moved the story along. But anyway, the next couple of missions are on the 25th of October. It's Glast, Meridian Station, Unconfirmed, and Evacuation. And the short version is Osiris follow Blue Team to Meridian. They arrive as the colony's being attacked by the Prometheans. They follow Blue Team underground to the Guardian's location. They end up having a fight between Chief and Locke, and Locke loses. And then Osiris also, during this, had their first encounter with the Warden Eternal. And then Blue Team escape on the Guardian, and Osiris are forced to evacuate the colony before the Guardian, like, EMPs it and takes out all the equipment. And that leads us into this Halo Fracture story, which is What Remains. That is also the 25th. And this follows Evelyn Collins and a group of survivors, and they are basically miners on the colony who are stuck on the planet with next to no technology. And they happen to be there and hear Cortana's call to the galaxy to join her in the Created. And they agree to help the Created, and were kind of left on like the cliffhanger of she responds, but like they're still trapped on Meridian on their own.
Yeah, but they're also kind of just like desperate, and Meridian is run by an AI already, and so their trust in AIs are, I guess, more so than others. So I feel like their motivation for all this is that they feel, you know, trapped and alone, and they need help, so they're succumbing to Cortana's, you know, martial law. But from there, to kind of continue Halo 5, we have Blue Team. They arrive on Genesis from the Guardian that they traveled on, and they learn about what Genesis is. They go in this activation process, so then Cortana can re-enter the kind of story from the domain.
I think the backstory to Genesis is it is like a physical, it's a physical link to the domain.
Oh yeah, like the installation. That's why when the splinter left the Diadex approach, the reason it was able to connect to the domain was because it found its way to Genesis, and Genesis has the capabilities and kind of has that entryway into the domain. But from there, Fireteam Osiris travels to St. Helios. They help the Swords of St. Helios fight the last of Julin Dama's Covenant forces. All the while, they know that a Guardian is there. And the St. Heli, who have like lived there for all these years, have like always known that there's a Guardian down there. And that's part of the reason why they worship Forerunner artifacts, is because they're aware of this structure that's just been dormant underneath their surface. But as Cortana's activating these guardians across the galaxy, this one is awoken, and Warden Eternals start coming in and fighting and saying that Locke and his team aren't worthy to, you know, meet Cortana, and that Chief and them have been chosen. And so there's a lot of fighting, and much like Blue Team, Locke and Fireteam Osiris decide to jump onto a Guardian to catch its slipspace portal to wherever they're going. And that's how Osiris then gets to Genesis. To then further track down Blue Team, they run down the Guardian once they get there, and they meet Exuberant Witness, the monitor of Genesis, and they just continue to fight Prometheans and any sort of Covenant forces that happen to be teleported through there.
We get another Warden Eternal fight as well, which is a bit meh. unless you sneak the tank into it. Fun tip for anyone that hasn't done that yet. Take the tank. That's the way to go. Fun fact, by the way, I remembered what Genesis also is. It's a world-building shield world. That's the lore behind it. It has a secret portal to the domain, but it builds seed worlds to house specimens for the repopulation of the galaxy. So it's like a world-building shield world, which comes into it later because it's a builder planet and Exuberant Witness is a builder monitor, which is important at the end of this because this finishes with Osiris fight their way to Blue Team. Then Cortana like snatches Blue Team away and moves them on. Exuberant Witness isn't very happy and also says that the Warden won't be very happy about this as well. And then...
Well, then basically we learn that Cortana wants to lock Blue Team in a cryptum and basically be her little trophies.
We get that scene where like real life creepy Karen Cortana appears, talks to Chief for a while, and then freezes them and goes like, this is for your own good. We're going to lock you away for 100,000 years. And then by that time, I'll be finished my work and you'll have no choice but to accept my decisions.
Yep. And Chief's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
You get that. And then we cut into the middle of this because during this like run and stuff, we hear Cortana's call to the galaxy. So this brings us to Rossback's world, where in this story, it's another Fracture story?
Yeah, it's another Fracture story on Earth.
Yeah, the short version of this is Hood and Osman being evacuated from Earth just as the Guardians attack Earth. And this actually is, it's all happening at the same time. Like, this is the end of Halo 5. So Osiris and Exuberant free Blue Team from the cryptum. Cortana's not very happy. The last scene we have in Halo 5 is the Infinity at Earth, and a Guardian appears. Infinity flees before the Guardian can zap them, and then we cut to black, and like the Infinity's on the run. But we also have this story of Rossback's world where BB realizes what's happening and puts an emergency plan into place. Osman and Hood are rushed up to the roof of Bravo 6 with a Spartan 4. They're given a briefcase. They're told they have to get off world now. I think it's like Spartan Rossback is meeting them somewhere. And they fly off Earth just as they see the Guardian moving into position over Sydney. And I think the last thing they see is there's a UNSC frigate engaging the Guardian above Sydney, and then they escape and go to Slipspace, and Osman's like wondering what happened on Earth. They arrive at Rossback's world, and this turns out to be like a livable planet that was discovered years ago and then BB kept hidden, and he built like a hideaway on it in case of emergency.
Yeah, like a safe house type of for any type of moment like this. Yeah, safe house.
Safe house is the word I was looking for there. So he has this cabin. Osman, Hood, and I'm afraid I forget the poor Spartan's name, are on this planet. Hood immediately descends into alcoholism. He digs into the whiskey supply.
And during this, BB's kind of like telling him everything that they know, that Cortana's out there, there's these Guardian attacks, there's a created uprising, and Osman's like, well, what, you know, do you agree with what's going on? And he like thinks for a moment and is like, I understand what they're doing, but no, like, it's not gonna work. But here are the other AIs that I was able to gather, and they're like off. And so BB's like, you know, if you turn them on, they might think for themselves once they kind of connect to Cortana's message and stuff like that. And so there's basically like the end of this is Osman just kind of sitting there with this briefcase to where she could just purge all these AIs to kind of prevent them from being used against themselves. But at the same time, it's like, well, if we keep these AIs, they could help fight against the created, but it's a gamble that we're going to have to take.
She's kind of left in the moral dilemma of, should I let these AIs make their own choices? But if they do decide to go to Cortana, they take the knowledge of Oni with them. Do I destroy them all and deny them that free will? Or do I keep them in the briefcase? And that's like where BB leaves them and we don't know what happens. I hope she didn't blow up BB, but we'll probably not know for quite some time.
But then during this moment, so like this is where we kind of cut back to some of those other stories that we talked about to where these Guardian events are happening all over the galaxy. So to kind of chime into Point of Light, after BB left New Carthage, you have Lessa and Ram. They actually get captured by Oni agents and are held in an Oni facility on New Carthage, and they're being interrogated, whereas Lessa's brother, he manages to get off-world by getting, you know, meeting a friend who was able to hitch a ride because he owes them a favor. So they're kind of go off on that. But after that, we get Lessa and Ram, and they're being interrogated by Oni, but then all of a sudden, sirens start to go, and there's loud noises and destruction, and a Guardian event happens in New Carthage, and it frees Ram and Lessa to the point that they're able to find each other, and amidst all the chaos, they see a Guardian event happening. And then this is then later talked about with once Ryan and Spark make it to Bastion, and they learn about what Bastion is, the AIs and imprints of, or the monitors at that installation discuss how the Guardian event is starting to take hold and we need to move Bastion out of this galaxy in order to protect it, because Bastion is like an also like a safe haven that the librarian created as like, it's like a floor plan of her like ideal Earth. And then there's also this storyline in there to where there's a possibility of reseeding precursor life in another galaxy. Basically, these monitors tell Spark that they and the librarian want him to be the one in charge of Bastion. And there's a very touching moment between him and Ryan when they basically say farewell, but it's what he kind of has to do. It's what his calling is. And Ryan gets it, understands it. And so she's able to take Little Bit, which is another AI, foreigner AI that Spark has been kind of repairing because he was damaged earlier in their story. And she takes the spirit or the Ace of Spades to like the meeting point where she's supposed to meet the rest of her crew. And then that's kind of where that story ends. But then you also have the Legacy of Onyx, where the Pale Blade and his forces attack the outpost, the UNSC and
Trevelyan, I think that's the name of the city.
Well, Trevelyan is the planet, I thought. I thought Trevelyan was another name for Onyx.
I think they end up calling like the city Trevelyan. That's like the planet's Onyx, the settlement is Trevelyan. It gets a bit complicated.
Oh, it's Oni Research Facility Trevelyan, named after Kurt. Gosh, there's so much lore. But yeah, basically that event, that whole coup, well, I guess it's not a coup, but the Pale Blades attempt to overthrow the UNSC forces on Onyx was interrupted by the Guardian. But what's interesting about this encounter is that a Huragog manages to fly, or float, I guess, into the Guardian's like Forerunner pieces and like deactivate it. The Pale Blade dies at the end, right? And there's a new Sangheili leader of the Servants of Abiding Truth, and they find like a vehicle cache of Forerunner vehicles, and they're also in this slipspace. You know, they're kind of stuck with them, and so that kind of gets left on that cliffhanger.
He doesn't die. He's still alive.
No, I thought he like was getting mauled by somebody.
He gets mauled. He gets his leg broken. He takes out the other guy that questions him the whole time. No, he's still alive at the end of this for the inevitable reunion with his brother when they make it up. But yes, no, the Pale Blade survives at the end of this. He is like...
But he's like broken. But yeah, he does kill someone.
Yeah, his like second in command that doubts him and questions him the whole way through it. And he eventually like takes him out with his broken leg, which like sets him up as being like the ultimate badass elite.
Yeah, it says they've pulled into a slipspace bubble as well, which contained Forerunner warship of unknown class and the supplies needed for them to bide their time until they can strike back. But Pale Blade also then learns that Julam Dama and his covenant are gone, so the Servants of Abiding Truth are one of the last, like, Sangheili-based covenant remnants that still exist. But let's see, the last little bit that we have here is Bad Blood, which happens directly after Halo 5. Do you want to talk about this? And then I think that gets us through all the Guardian events.
Yeah, right. We'll not go too deep into this because we are running long already. Okay, so the last kind of bit in this is Halo Bad Blood. So this takes place roughly the 29th of October on. There's a lot to this, so we're going to like vaguely skim over it. So this story starts off immediately where Halo 5 ends. You have Blue Team and Osiris. They have to like make their way back off Genesis. They get back to Sangheili. They meet up with Halsey and Palmer and the rest of the crew. They get back to the Infinity. When they're back to the Infinity, Durr gives them a special mission. So Buck is forced to go reassemble Alpha 9. He has to go get Mickey to help him. And they have to break Mickey out of Spartan prison. They have to go to the Spartan 4 training facility, which has been taken over by Leonidas, who is now working for Cortana and the Created, but the Spartan 4s there didn't know that. I think when he's there, he also meets up with Dutch and Gretchen because they have now become Spartan 4s and they were actually finishing up their training. Then they go to Earth and they meet up with the engineers that now live on the moon. And they persuade Virgil to come and help them. And they have to go to the colony world of... what was the name again, Oren?
Cassidy 3.
So the reason they're going to Cassidy 3 is it has some sort of Forerunner MacGuffin technology that kind of cloaks the planet. So it has a colony on it. They are not very keen on the UNSC. They don't want to help the Infinity. Then the UNSC have to help them because a Guardian arrives, because of course it did. The newly sort of like reassembled Alpha 9 have to like do their best to defend the colony, evacuate as many people as they can, try to stop the Guardian and escape. But the short version is they escape, but like they don't really help the colony that much because the Guardian's there and kind of kicks his ass. I think the residents, do the people left on the colony end up surrendering to Cortana?
I think they did. Yeah, I think they just gave it because they were helpless. I think it was just kind of they were reluctant and they just had to.
Some evacuate, but the rest have to stay there and like do their thing. So Alpha 9 end up back on the Infinity. They're kind of no further along. They don't have the super Forerunner technology to hide from Cortana. And Buck and Durr get married?
They do.
That would kind of be the quick version of all that. And then Alpha 9 is back in action. Mickey is now officially back on the team. He is a Spartan again. Everyone's kind of like getting along. And that's sort of where that book finishes up. It's another one of those, a lot happens, but like by the end of it, it hasn't really progressed the post-Halo 5 universe too much.
Bad Blood just kind of gives us another perspective of the Guardian event, while also throwing in a lot of just crazy shenanigans that Dare and Buck go through. But yeah, that's... I mean, we knew this was going to be a long one, but we wanted to get from Halo 4 to the end of Halo 5, essentially, because there's still a fair bit that happens between now and Infinite. But we'll cut it there. We'll finish this up in part 2 very soon. If you don't have anything else, Aaron, I think you could take us home, but that's a lot of stuff that's happened since 343's kind of taken over between Halo 4 and Halo 5 with all the other books and comics and short stories and stuff. It's a lot of info.
Yes, there's an awful lot there. You will hear the nice clean version of this where we did not spend a lot of time trying to get this straight in our heads because there is so much to tackle and we haven't even gotten to part 2 yet. But no, I am very much happy to wrap for now, and then we will tackle the rest in part two. Right, so guys, thank you very much for joining us. If you made it the whole way through this, we very much appreciate it. I will link in the show notes to a lot of the relevant things that we've already covered, so book clubs, mission debriefs. I will link to all those so you will have things you can go and check out if you're rusty on any of these. Some of these books are quite old at this stage, so even we are a bit rusty on them now, but you can go and listen to the book clubs and refresh your memories. Like we said at the top of the show, you can find every episode we do over at the website. It's halopodcastevolve.com. It's got links to all of the shows, the feeds, the episodes, everything else. You can also search out our individual podcast feeds on your service of choice. And if you would prefer to listen to everything all in one feed, follow Halo Podcast Evolved, and we put everything up there. And if you could give us a review, that would be much appreciated. And once again, a special shout out to all of our patrons for supporting us and helping make everything possible. Go to patreon.com/Halo Podcast Evolved to learn more about becoming a patron. Finally, if you've enjoyed what you've listened to, or you have any questions, because that would be understandable, you can leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 205-EVOLVED, that's 205-386-5833. We usually go over those on the live show, but if you have any questions or comments about this, leave them in your voicemail and I will reference them in part 2 when we get that far. If you would like anything featured, feel free to drop it in there and we will get it covered. And with that, I have been your host Aaron, and until next time, Evolved?
Evolved! We'll be right back.